Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We are continuing our short trek through the Walt Simonson run on Fantastic Four in the very late 80s and the very early 90s. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Tonight, we are talking about Fantastic Four by Walt Simonson, Volume 2, Visionaries. We are walking through issues number 343, 344, 345, and 346. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob, man. We had to take a time sled trip back to the 90s?
Yeah, time sled trip back to the 90s, man. And I'm going to talk about this a little later, but it's interesting how the visual images of the sleds and the rafts just keep popping up in this run.
If you got to get somewhere, there's only one way to get there.
Yeah, they're all rafts, aren't they?
Just about rafts and sleds. That we can build a cool vehicle.
So you really enjoyed the cover to this trade, Matt?
The cover itself is really awesome. The cover of the actual volume is the actual cover of issue 343 entitled Nuke Busters. And I love the cover because it has all five members of the Fantastic Four with giant guns, huge guns. That's what Fantastic Four need to be known for. I'm praying they have big guns in the new movie. Oversized guns.
I think that's actually only the 90s Fantastic Four. I don't think that's... Maybe I'm wrong. Again, my reading of the Fantastic Four is somewhat limited, and as we've established on the podcast, my memory is not the best. Them having guns is really only a Walt Simonson thing and a Tom DeFalco thing.
Oh, that's a shame, because that needs to be all over the place. I love it when they have them big guns. I don't even know what they shoot. I don't care. Like, action figure heaven right there.
It's a little weird, right, because... I assume these are supposed to be the guns that we see in the cover of 343. That's also the cover of the Walt Simonson Visionaries Volume 2 trade. And I assume these are the guns we see them use in 344, which they're EMP pulse guns that Reed invented.
And what's really awesome about Reed's gun is he's the only one that can use it because his arm stretches to the handle.
I would say, dear listeners, you're listening to this and you're probably correctly recognizing that Matt is a child of the early 90s and definitely deeply responds to Cable and Deadpool and all characters with giant guns. And that's true, but there's also an interesting angle. The Fantastic Four having the guns is so funny because it feels so opposed to the Fantastic Four's more Star Trek-y adventure qualities. So that makes it funny, and it makes me like them having guns. But then there's also the appropriate angle of usually the guns are not even really guns. They're just insane things that Reed invented to shoot down nukes with EMP pulses or to open dimensional rifts or whatever. And so there is a wackiness to the FF guns that are more justified than, say, a Cable gun or a Deadpool. That makes sense.
It's just the fact that it's a giant gun. It's bigger than their bodies.
It's an oversized gun. It's a 90s gun. It's very important that it be all out of proportion to their bodies. Yeah. The other framing question I wanted to ask, given that we've got basically two-parters that we're talking about this week, who are you more afraid of, Stalin or dinosaurs?
Honestly, Bob, I'm probably more afraid of the dinosaurs because on the cover of one of the issues that says Fantastic Four No More, that Triceratops man, he has torn the Fantastic Four apart.
He's going for it.
Triceratops will kill you.
So our first issue, Matt, is because we're skipping issue number 342, because it seems every 10 years, Fantastic Four has to do an issue about how kids lighting themselves on fire because they like the Human Torch. It's not cool. This is the early 90s version of this issue. John Byrne already did an issue of that in the early 80s. I feel like somebody else did an issue about that in the 70s, too. It's a pretty eternal topic.
Bob, when you were reading it, did it not just put ideas in your head? I feel it probably started the opposite of what they were intending. I think kids actually went and lit themselves on fire after reading that issue.
I don't remember the specifics, but I think there apparently were a couple of real cases.
At least those are really stupid kids. But to me, reading the issue, this just gives you the idea of how to do it. It really tells you, pour gasoline on yourself.
Did you know that was the origin of Herbie? The listeners could correct me on this. I might be slightly wrong, but there's a very bad, I think, late 70s Fantastic Four cartoon where they don't have the Human Torch and they replace him with the robot.
Oh, you're saying why Herbie exists? Yes, they replaced Human Torch with Herbie because kids were setting themselves on fire.
This has been something that the lore has had to reckon with ever since.
The kids never fail to amaze me how stupid they can be, Bob. I was the one, Bob, who would jump off the slide with an umbrella thinking I was going to float like the Penguin.
Penguin is also a dangerous influence on children.
Yeah, they need to have an issue where it just talks about that. talks about Batman jumping off buildings. You shouldn't do that either.
Bad, kids. It's bad. We're skipping issue 342, which is also neither written nor drawn by Walt Simonson, and is a very special issue dedicated to the Human Torch's trauma and kids lighting themselves on fire. We're going straight into issue number 343, Nuke Busters. What goes down in Nuke Busters, Matt?
So, Bob, the Fantastic Five discover that they are on an alternate Earth where the Cold War never ended and Dan Quayle is president. And for listeners confused, Fantastic Five, we have Ben Grimm and we have She-Thing. So we have five members.
Yeah, Sharon Ventura and Ben Grimm. Two things, although the Thing is only occasionally in a mechanical Thing suit. Most of the time, he's just Ben.
Right.
And Matt, did you like the very early 90s political commentary that a President Quayle is the most horrific thing imaginable?
I wasn't really up on politics at the time, so I don't remember how bad Dan Quayle was. I don't want to make this political like too much, but you think that Dan Quayle probably would have been better off just than what we have now. So.
I don't know. I have complicated feelings about that.
I don't know enough about Quayle, and I really don't want to learn about him, but I just know that if he didn't have Twitter at the time, he probably could have been better.
Well, I would say, too, that it's interesting that maybe I'm wrong about this because you and I were very young in the early 90s, and so we weren't paying attention to politics on a very intelligent level. But I seem to recall that the reaction against Dan Quayle was entirely, oh, he's dumb. I'm sure his politics were in line with George Bush I's politics,
yeah.
Right? But I think the response was always just about how dumb Quayle was.
So let me tell you everything I know about Dan Quayle. You ready, Bob? Dan Quayle misspelled potato.
Yes.
Dan Quayle, if you do poorly on the Civilization game, I think it was Civilization 3 or 4, if you got the lowest ranking, you were Dan Quayle.
Interesting.
That's all I know.
Was it him or was it George Bush I who seemed to think Murphy Brown was a real person?
I told you everything I know about Dan Quayle, Bob.
I thought that you would know this because it, you know, went to like early 90s pop culture, and you and I as kids both really liked Murphy Brown, if I remember correctly.
I didn't like Murphy Brown.
I liked Murphy Brown. I thought she was hilarious.
We're going to have to Google this because I have to figure out Murphy Brown.
Wasn't there a thing where Murphy Brown was a single mother and either George Bush I or Dan Quayle gave a speech scolding Murphy Brown for being a single mother, but the way he gave the speech, it seemed like he thought she was a real woman and not a TV character.
Apparently in 1992, Candace Bergen's character became a single mother. This sparked criticism from the vice president, Dan Quayle, who used the show as an example of how family values were being undermined in society.
I don't know, man. I'm still willing to say that, like, bad as Trump is, I think most Republicans are worse.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And all right, Bob. I don't know anything else about Dan Quayle other than that, but I assume most Republicans.
Well, now I've learned a little another tidbit about Dan Quayle, about the Murphy Brown thing. Well, I'm just, the more you know. I do want to take the time to point out something I do love from the 90s, and this is one of my favorite panels. On issue 31, they're pushing Johnny Storm to the extreme, trying to make him dizzy. I don't know what they're doing. It's their version of the Danger Room. But it's redoing experiment.
This is another trope of Fantastic Four comics, going back to like Jack Kirby, is that Reed always has these insane machines in his lab, and he's always doing insane tests on either, usually Ben, but sometimes Johnny.
Johnny doesn't look very happy about it, but he also wants to make sure Reed hurries it up because he doesn't want to miss Twin Peaks. I love a Twin Peaks reference.
I'm glad you caught that. I missed that when I was rereading this. And it's very apropos because many young characters in the Marvel Universe in the early 90s were big Twin Peaks fans. The New Mutants were big Twin Peaks fans. So my favorite panel is on page 36. And that's where we have all the Fantastic Five members simultaneously busting into a room, all having real lights that they're in a parallel universe. I thought that was a pretty funny page.
Once again, Bob, cinematic moment right there. I could see it in the new film.
Very cinematic, very cinematic. Matt, what goes down in issue 344, Nuke Busters 2, !
Well, Bob, in Nuke Busters 2, the Fantastic Four face Stalin, but he's in a mech suit.
Like we were talking about already with the cover of the prior issue 343, Matt, my favorite panels are on 53 and 54, where we see Reed, Johnny, and Sharon wield giant EMP guns to shoot down the nukes that have been launched by President Quayle and Marshal Stalin. These are very funny moments.
Yeah. My favorite panel in this issue is when they do make it into the regeneration lab. They get down to the lab and they look over at the wall, and the wall is comprised of a mech. And she thing is impressed that the mech was part of the wall. I don't know why that stuck with me. Yeah, the mech was in the wall. It's not that, it's in its charging station. But in the 90s, they didn't realize it was there. It blows my mind. This is the first time we get a good shot of a mech suit. And I got to say, I like the way the Russians go with this, Bob.
Hey, man, Russian engineering, it's actually pretty impressive.
And apparently he can't be harmed inside the thing. He's in his regeneration chamber.
Of the glorious Soviet Union. So, Matt, I did want to say, and I didn't think about this until you started describing this. Does it seem Walt Simonson probably liked anime with all the mech suits and dinosaurs all over these four issues? I didn't think about this until you were describing the mech suit architecture. But yeah, I bet Walt Simonson was watching some Japanime anime, as we used to say.
He totally was. I'm sure he was. You got mech suits all over the place. You got Ben Grimm in a mech suit, kind of.
It's wild. Well, we can keep moving to the first part of the second two-parter, and this is issue number 345, Mesozoic Mambo! What goes down in Mesozoic Mambo, Matt?
So, you know, after escaping the Soviet world there, they're able to use the time sled, and they crash on an island with dinosaurs and also a lost military unit.
This is a reference to a DC comic.
I feel like it is, Bob.
I think the title, although it may have the title wrong, but I think the title is The War That Time Forgot.
Yeah, okay. I knew I recognized this like scenario, and I cannot for the life of me think of where I've seen it. I kept thinking it was a TV show. No, there's never been a TV show like this.
It was a 1950s war strip in DC where I think it was World War II GIs in the Pacific got stuck on an island where dinosaurs had survived. Yeah. And then you probably remember it from either the New Frontier comic or maybe the New Frontier animated movie. Although
that's where it is. Okay. The animated film, The New Frontier. I had this giant size, like comic book historical compendium type thing that my grandparents bought me.
Oh yeah. I think I did look at that.
It was huge. It was oversized coffee table type thing. And I would just flip through it occasionally. And I do remember stories. I remember there was a whole section on the war type stories from the '50s. And that was, I believe, one of them.
Nice. Yeah. So Walt Simonson, both a fan of anime and both a fan of 1950s war and dinosaur comics, if I am correct here. So I wanted to flag one page from 345 on page 77 of the trade. I found pretty unsettling, and that's a she-thing growing hair.
It's disturbing.
And we see a little bit later too with her transform. And there are other transforming pages of her later in this issue and the next issue that are strange.
The next time I get my haircut, I'm going to like glue some to a rock and see what it looks like.
That tea thing.
No, I just want to have a rock with hair growing out of it just to show people. Be like, hey, look at this rock. It's growing some hair. It's unsettling. It's scary. You're right.
So there's a lot of great anti-dinosaur violence in this issue, and we'll highlight some more of it. But my favorite is probably on page 80 of the trade. And that's, we see a T-Rex chomping on a GI. While earlier I was giving this whole convoluted thing about, oh, usually when you see the Fantastic Four with guns, it's ridiculous science guns that are absurd that Reed is. And that's usually right. These two issues are really straining my explanation because, no, we just see them, all the Fantastic Five, pick up assault rifles from these soldiers. And so we see Reed trying to shoot into the brain of a T-Rex with an assault rifle. It's very funny.
Reminiscent of those games you used to play in CCs where you had the light guns shooting at the dinosaurs, shooting for the brain.
I was going to say, was Walt Simonson going to CCs, but I don't know if CCs existed in 1991.
I don't think it did. Jurassic Park hadn't hit, so that game probably wasn't even released.
But you can definitely tell that Simonson's in the zeitgeist predicting Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, he is, for sure. Yeah, definitely with the dinosaurs.
What was your favorite page of anti-dinosaur violence?
Starts on page 89 and goes on to the next page. But Reed Richards decides to take his uniform and act like a matador to tempt the Triceratops to come running at him. So we have Reed Richards,
to the listeners.
He's in his briefs, his tidy whities, not boxers, talk tidy whities, running around on Dinosaur Island, being chased by a Triceratops, all while army men are shooting at it with an assault rifle.
Why?
And then he proceeds to not put his pants back on until page 95. So Reed's in his underpants for almost 10 pages.
Hey man, it's the 90s. You need guns and you need skin, Now, usually when you say skin, you're not picturing Reed Richards. You're picturing an attractive lady or Wolverine. But in this case, it's Reed Richards, okay?
But this leads to a couple of other weird things that we'll get into with this. One thing, on page 92, Bob, you mentioned that the way they decide to attack the dinosaurs. What are some ways we get these dinosaurs to take care of?
Some other notable examples of anti-dinosaur violence. So Sue has a handgun that she's firing at the dinosaurs, and she runs out of ammunition. And so on page 92, she's just tossing an empty handgun at a velociraptor. That was pretty amusing. And then we really up the ante on the next page, 93 in the trade, where Ben literally snaps off with a snap sound effect, the tail of a velociraptor. And it's not gory. Us coming off just reviewing Archie versus Predator 2, ladies and gentlemen, we might expect there to be gore, but there's no gore. He just snaps the tail off.
And I want to be very clear, folks. These are not dinosaur robots, which is the first thing I thought. It's all robot dinosaurs. No, he literally rips an actual dinosaur's tail off.
Yeah, does PETA get involved about protesting depiction of violence against dinosaurs? I could see an argument for it. It is disturbing.
I did not expect this level of human dinosaur violence in this comic book when I picked it up.
On the one level, it's great. It's really funny and it's really creative. But on the other level, it is a little disturbing.
We need to just take a snapshot of Ben holding the tail and put it on Twitter. That's the page right there. That's the panel. Then he just tosses it to the side like it's nothing. No blood, nothing.
I mean, this raises the question, I haven't tweeted in months. Do we just need to delete our Twitter?
I'm good about it. I stopped checking Twitter about a year ago. I can't take it anymore.
Man, it's really gone bad. It was never good, but it's really gone bad. All right. Well, on to more interesting subjects than our social media strategies, Matt. What goes down in issue number 346, 70 million years BC and then some exclamation point?
So the Fantastic Four build a raft to return to their own time.
Well, if you want to travel through time, you got to have a raft.
You have to have a raft. No car, no plane, no boat. You have to have a raft. I do want to point out, Bob, on the cover of this issue, 346, that the Tyrannosaurus does have some nasty yellow teeth.
It does. And we get a good display of those teeth on page 104 when that Tyrannosaurus Rex is chomping on Ben in his thing suit.
Man, that thing suit's way stronger than I thought it was. I wonder what Reed made that out of. Adamantium?
Rocks, Matt. Rocks.
He made it out of rocks. I wonder if it's made of adamantium or vibranium or what. It's going
to
be one of those.
This is a little before everything started to be made of adamantium. I think that's more of like a post X-Men 1 thing. Oh. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my theory.
I'm just saying, a Tyrannosaurus chomping on you, you got to have something really strong to not, stop those jaws.
Rocks. Matt, what was your favorite panel of this last issue we're covering?
My favorite panel is on page 116, and it's when Sue is, they're all in the water, and they're all like tread water. They've left the island, but they're not quite sure if what's happened. And Sue discovers that she has her powers back, and she's able to raise everyone out of the water, which is a really cool scene, because it starts off where they're all floating, you can barely see their heads. Then you see Sue and the men both come up, and it's almost like they're walking on water, and then it's, they're on a invisible platform.
It does keep this motif of first we have a time sled, then we have a log raft, and then we just have Sue's invisible force field raft, right? Really keeping the raft and sled motif going.
No, I will say the transformation back to She thing at the end is not as gory or not as disturbing as when she turns the other way, because she doesn't lose her hair. It just grows over it. I'm like, it'd be more interesting if her hair fell out than...
But no, there's still hair under there.
She's wearing a mask. It's just not as interesting. All right, Bob, we get this one last panel at the end of this issue that's of the TVA. Did you have anything to say about that?
Much very bureaucratic depiction of the temporal variance authority or the TVA, right? And especially amusing to read this after I haven't watched it, but apparently the TVA is just huge and all over Loki, right?
It is, yeah. That's what I was wondering. This looks like where they pulled, this reminds me of the TVA from the TV shows. I'm like, okay, it's the same. Even the dude with the mustache right there, I'm like, that's the guy that Owen Wilson played.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize it was so strongly visually. That's interesting. Well, Matt, do you want to guess about, we have a tease for the next issue that we'll take up next week, and that's motorcycles, rampages, snicks, and webs. What could that tease be?
Well, Bob, I think we may be getting a new Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Matt, we are getting a new Fantastic Four. And do you remember who's in this new Fantastic Four?
All right. Well, with motorcycles, I'm assuming Ghost Rider.
Very good.
Rampages would be the Hulk.
Very good.
Schnitzed would be Wolverine.
Very good.
And then Webs would be Spider-Man.
That's it. That's it. And I'm actually impressed you got Rampages. I don't know if I would have gotten that one. I mean, Rampaging Hulk is a common adjective, but at the same time, it's such a vague term.
I do know, listeners, that we will be witnessing the Gray Hulk in the upcoming issue, which I'm going to do some research on. I don't remember why the hell he's gray.
I don't think it matters. Originally, the Hulk is gray, right?
I know.
And then he pretty quickly becomes green. This is in the Peter David era of Hulk, the guy who wrote Supergirl and Young Justice.
Yeah.
He wrote Incredible Hulk for 10 years and did a lot of things with Hulk psychology in those 10 years. And at one point in the run, he has Hulk go gray. I've never read this stuff and I don't know much about it, but I think it's broadly the personality he gets when he's gray is more intelligent and more scheming. He becomes a mob enforcer in Vegas and goes by the name Mr. Fix-It.
Oh, yeah, I know Mr. Fix-It.
I don't know. Now, that said, I think Gray Hulk doesn't always perfectly line up with the Mr. Fix-It personality. It's been a while since I've read this new Fantastic Four story, and I don't remember how much any of that specifically ties in.
Okay.
Well, Matt, do you remember the promos for the new Fantastic Four or seeing the new Fantastic Four around in the day?
No, I don't remember any of that, honestly.
It's funny because I feel like when we were coming up in the 90s, this story was roundly mocked as like, oh, what a stupid idea. They replaced the Fantastic Four. And I mean, I'll be curious to see what you make of it when we discuss it. But as I recall from reading it 5 years ago, it's a comedy story. It's very much just, oh yeah, this is the zeitgeist and I'm going to lean into it and make fun of it.
Yeah.
But then nobody got the joke, or not nobody, but a lot of people didn't get the joke. And then they criticized the story for being the thing it was making fun of.
Okay. When I read through, I'll think along those lines and just see if I can catch anything. For me, it's hard to replace the core members like that. And I don't know to what extent did this team last.
Oh, it's just the one story.
It's it's not even a big okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're going to be discussing 5 or 6 issues. And next time, I don't remember off the top of my head. It's whatever's in Fantastic Four Visionaries, Walter Simonson, Volume 3. And it's the new Fantastic Four story, which is like 3 issues. And then we're going to discuss complicated 3-issue time travel story, I think is what we've got on. If I remember correctly, that's what's on.
All right. We'll look forward to that, Bob. Honestly, I'm enjoying Simonson's run. I will say that the first volume was stronger than this volume, just because but the wackiness continues to ensue.
Yeah. But as we talk about it, I see the wackiness became even more obvious to me of these two-parters. It was already pretty obvious, but talking about it with you actually did make me appreciate these two-parters a little bit more.
Yeah. With the movie coming out, I really hope that they go in this direction of wackiness, because that's where Fantastic Four is different. You got the family dynamic and you got the wackiness part. That's the goofy stuff.
And like you were saying last week when we were talking about the first Simonson trade, also the Star Trekiness of it.
Yeah, you got to have the explore imaginaut piece. And I feel like the other films have done that to some degree, but no one's ever really got it right. The most recent Fantastic Four release, that was just nothing but them being imaginauts with no personalities, no family dynamic, really.
No shame. No sense of humor.
Right.
So if you can somehow get the family angle, the exploring angle, and the humor angle, then that might be the ticket to disambiguating Fantastic Four. Why are they special and different than the Avengers or the X-Men?
Got it.
Maybe the movie will do it. I'm not holding my breath, but maybe it will do it. But you know who does do it? Walt Simonson. We'll see next week. I hope everybody joins us. This has been Uncanny Treks.
Thanks for listening.